You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. Jack, speaking of awards, could you
award us with
a question of the week?
Wow, nice transition.
That was beautiful.
Aaron. I can, Aaron. Would you like me to?
Oh, no. Is that the question like when you're in elementary school? Can I? I don't know. Can you?
Yeah, it's like, may I? No, yeah. The question of the week is, how can I be a faithful Catholic while also advocating for social justice and equality?
Can I be a faithful Catholic while also advocating for social justice and equality?
I like this question.
I'd like to jump in first.
Oh, jump. Unpredictable.
One, his 2 cents.
He made both
of his 2 cents.
This is going to be a good episode.
Aaron's on fire, ladies and gentlemen.
So it's still in the rearview mirror, right? We just finished election season here in the United States of America. And I've had reason to reflect on a number of occasions that there's such a strong parallel between the bipartisan, polarized, bad stuff that we experience in the context of the political system that has a direct parallel to what we see in the church. So I'm sure this was not the intent of the question that was asked, but so many times, like, I feel like there is an either or, like, you've got to choose liturgy and holiness and sacrament and beauty, or you've got to choose social justice and equality. And I think my 2 cents is this: the church is not a two-party system.
Mm-hmm.
Right? In fact, the church speaks very explicitly that this is not the case, and that we as Catholics are invited to and expected to not prohibit what the church herself permits, right? So the mindset that I've got to choose one or the other, or that I've got to have an orientation toward one or the other, is just a broken mindset. And I think especially for us as Americans, it comes from a broken political mindset that just poisons and influences the church.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, broken political mindset. Yeah, I would agree that it is, but I think actually there is a brokenness in the way we as American Catholics speak that caused this kind of a question to even be a question,
of
right?
Course.
Yeah. So it is like, how can I be a faithful Catholic while promoting social justice and equality?
In my mind, I hear, how can I be a Republican and still care about, you know, the poor?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
But what's happened in the formation of someone's life that they don't associate equality and justice with being a faithful Catholic? So it's, how can you be a faithful Catholic if you aren't? and this is honestly the question we should ask the church today. Yeah. A lot of people in America, you're not being faithful Catholics if you dog social justice. You're not being faithful Catholics if you dog equality. There's there's a major problem with that we think that if I stand on the right side of certain issues, then I am a faithful Catholic and I'm going to completely ignore other issues. It's the dignity of the human person is in a lot
it's
of
paramount.
Different issues. Yeah, it's paramount, and it's not only paramount in a few issues. It's paramount in all issues. The dignity of every human person, right?
Yeah.
So we should care just as, like, yes, you're dead on, Aaron. I think it's sad that even the word faithful Catholic would be associated with one camp and unfaithful Catholic would be associated with another camp. It just means we don't understand our own orthodoxy. We don't understand our own call as Catholics to be holistic and comprehensive, not bipartisan.
No, that's right. There is anecdote to, I think, just to steel man the person's, I think there is anecdote to public displays of people who advocate for the two things here, social justice and equality, while being completely athwart the church's teaching on a variety of other things. And so I do see that, like, if it can be confusing, if this is a young adult or like someone trying to begin to build their life of faithfulness in the world, like when you do have a president of the United States, like Joe Biden, advocating for these things, that's like, we can't as a church be behind those. And then you do hear him advocating for other things. You're asking yourself an all or nothing question instead of going issue by issue and defining, but why might that be good, right? And then once you can begin to see that everyone isn't like all right or all wrong, then you can really start seeing what the Catholic Church has always taught. So I guess just because I think it can be a confusing time to live in. Like, if we're looking at a historical context, like, I love the idea that we're not a two-party system in the church, because even the two-party system in America is partially what is like to blame for this sort of thinking. And the reason I say that is because for the longest time, faithful Catholics were faithful Democrats. And that was because the dignity of the human person was like well associated there. And there's been mixing back and forth. But the reason I say it like that is if you look at the majority of the 1900s, that was the case. But then what happens is as social issues become part of the political stances, then all of a sudden the faithful Catholics are like, well, I've always been a Democrat, so I still am. But they start taking these stances on social issues that are athwart the faith that was about the dignity of the human person. And then this confusion starts. And then the right has this confusion with like, yeah, but okay.
How do we break the two-party system, Brad?
I think every Catholic should see themselves as, and I'm not saying you have to register as this, but every Catholic should see themselves as independent.
Yeah, right.
We are not that we are discussing how to engage on issues and we're not following a platform. The only platform we have is the word of God. Yeah, that's our platform. And so, so the fact that I think I am pro-life and I have this huge pro-life spirit, but then I speak with words that are degrading to the people who are suffering on the southern border, the living in horrible conditions, being treated like crap. It's a problem. And Catholics need to be called out when they do that kind of stuff, because our dialogue is often not pro-life. Yeah. And so we also need to be careful when we judge other Catholics quickly for being Democrat or for being Republican, right? Instead, let's go into an area of saying like, let's talk about these issues and what does the church see about these issues and how does each issue get lived as a Catholic?
Yeah. Can I paraphrase? I think what you're saying is neither of the two parties represents the church.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Aaron's point is too. And I do think that this red team, blue team thing is super toxic, because what's happened is I always come back to the marks of the church. So if you're listening, the four marks that we say in the creed all the time, we're one, holy, Catholic, and apostolic. I'm going to focus just on the one. Like, the reason that the church was distinguished as one is the unity of the church was supposed to bring unity to the world, not the division in the world to bring division into the church. And we have, instead of standing on that mark and standing on that unity, we've allowed the fracturing in the world to then fracture us. And we've seen it since the schism in the 1100s,
And what's remarkable is this is entirely a human thing and it's entirely not a church thing. So like every authoritative doctrine when it comes to the church and her leadership is always about the unification, right? Mm-hmm. So where are the divisions in the church right now? Like the liturgy wars, right? Yeah. I was on a call this morning even about criticism about the use of music in the liturgy. Well, if you read the documents, guess what it says? Both and.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But no, it doesn't mean both and, because I saw the footnotes and
The documents
say both and. Like, you want to hear about social justice and holiness? Like, let's listen to Jesus.
It's both and.
It's always both and. Charismatic versus ecclesial or hierarchical. Guess what? It's both and. The co-essential dimensions of the church. Like, we've got to get ourselves out of this mindset that in order for me to win, somebody else has to lose.
Yeah, right. Holiness and mission is another thing. Or even just if we get to the liturgy piece, ad orientem and versus populum. It's like both are in church documents regularly. Yeah. So like, again, demanding conformity where the church is allowed for diversity of expression is a bad idea. I have two cents.
We're having fun, boys. Whoever asked this question, good work.
I'll throw my two cents in. So the question is, how can I remain a faithful Catholic and while also implementing these two things and what were named was social justice and equality?
Yeah.
I think, and we've done a lot of discussing kind of the nature of the question and where it might come from. And again, if you ask this, like, please ask a follow-up. Like, if any of this is not getting to what you're actually asking, but I want to take it. So let's take what we've said is that social justice and equality are absolutely parts of the gospel of Jesus Christ. They're absolutely parts of the church. But now let's what I want to do in my two cents is focus in on social justice and equality. Like, what are we saying when we say those terms? Because that's usually where the disagreement's at. The disagreement actually isn't in that Catholics disagree with social justice, but when social justice is used to explain a certain something, Catholics do reject it. Or if equality is used to define a certain something, then Catholics do reject it. What happens is we're actually arguing on the semantics of it. And I think that there actually is a worthwhile discussion around the two terms. So when we're talking social justice, what is justice? It's giving someone what they're due, right? And as a human person, you've been made in the image and likeness of God. And so you're due respect, care, and love, right? And in a society, we live with other people of which all of those things I just said are true. And so in a social context, we are trying to give the society, meaning those people around us, what they are due. And we've already said what they're ultimately due is dignity. What does the word dignity come from? Dignitas, which means worth. Like, it shows them that they are worth something. So social justice is an orientation of the heart that recognizes that every human person has worth, right? Mm-hmm. That's why abortion is a social justice issue. That's why poverty is a social justice issue. That's why marginalized groups that are discriminated against is a social justice issue. And all of these are things that the church has stood on the forefront of from its inception, right? Like, and I think that's amazing. Like in the society, like, what do we do with this idea? Because again, distinction can actually still be equal, but different. And that's the beauty, like man and woman, he created them. Okay. How do men and women fit into this society that we have? And what's the best use? And that's a good conversation. That's a Catholic conversation. Like there's a reason we hold Mary high and we hold Joseph high. Like you can get where I'm getting at with this is like from the dawn of the church, we're asking these really important questions about just because I see difference doesn't mean I need to make the other in order for them to be equal. Like when God gives distinction, God makes plants and animals. Plants and animals don't have to become each other to have equal beauty, right? They're different things, but they work in harmony would be the word that the church has used often in the social justice realm is we're bringing harmony to the society that's around us. Then let's look at the other word, which is equality. Like that matters what we mean too, because it seems to me like when we're saying equality, what we're trying to say is that everyone is brought to a place of dignity together, right? But where the two sides get into tension is that when one side of the argument says that equality means everyone has to have the same outcome, what other people hear is we're going to take things from people by force, and we are going to make sure that people can't ascend to a certain level that is impossible for others to attain. But that leaves you not able to innovate and move forward. And so they're like staunchly against that. On the other side, what they hear is when you say equality, you just mean opportunity. And what you mean by that is just let all the people who already have the upper hand have the upper hand. Okay. Mm-hmm. So these are the two extremes of, but when we're saying equality in the church, we're saying equality of opportunity, but in the dare I say supernatural sense of opportunity, like the opportunity to encounter Christ, to know the Father, like not saying that Dan, Aaron and Brad have to be the same to be equal. It's actually really good that we're different and we're actually going to have to live in relationship if we're going to be equal. That's where the equality comes from relationship, not from the disproportionate allotment of resource or the demand of love, because love can't be demanded. Like love is a free gift. And so actual equality doesn't come from someone saying, Brad, all that stuff, not yours. It has to be theirs. It's like, no, I should have a move of the heart that loves my brother so much that I give freely so we can live in harmony in society. So anyway, I'm really interested in this as indicated by those two cents, but I do think that's good to know. Like those two things are important to address, because if we don't address them as the church, who is going to in a sane and balanced way? No one, because there's going to be agendas everywhere. The agenda here is simply, what did Jesus do? What did he represent? What did he build his church upon? Which was one holy Catholic and apostolic. And are we living that in the world? Because if we were living that in the world, what we would find is we would be living social justice in the true sense of the term. And we would be living equality in the true sense of the term. Mm. I'll leave it there.
I think it's really smart that you're pointing out the extremes. Cause I think a lot of times,
whichever side you lean towards.
Yeah. Whatever side you lean
towards.
Which
we all have temperaments that lean us to certain sides too, which is also beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. And the extremes are what are used as the,
fodder against the other.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's not very intelligent. It just really isn't the intelligent way to have a conversation, right? That, and so what happens is we're, instead of really talking about the Catholic social principles that we need to talk about, or even if we're not talking about Catholic social principles, instead of just even having real conversation on, well, what do you mean by equality? And
correct.
And who needs to be equal with who, and how do we help the marginalized find the equality that they deserve? And so, but because we're strong arming these semantics, mm-hmm. and we're not actually getting into the real issues, we're not making movement.
It's in group, out group. It's me and my team and you and your team, and we have a better.
And like the extreme that is wrong, right, on both sides, mm-hmm. the extremes that are wrong, it doesn't undervalue the need to have the conversation because there is an injustice happening. And so, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would also say, like, if we can't say this as faithful Catholics, then we really have some soul searching to do. Like a properly aligned, like, again, just using the political spectrum, if you've ever studied political science, but you don't have to, but like an appropriate ordered left and an appropriate ordered right is actually really, really healthy for the other. Because what the right says is, hey, these traditions that we've had forever, they actually work and they allow people to flourish and they allow people to succeed. What the properly ordered left then says is, yeah, but let's not forget that it also marginalizes and disassociates some people. And then the conversation is, how can we keep this without doing that? And then you do have a real dialogue, but when you become just enemies of the other, mm-hmm. you can never have it's just the same way that us three have conversations off the microphone that we disagree on.
And we
We are enemies. Well, even,
yeah, we're all enemies. We hate each other.
I actually think that's a great point, Brad, because if in political science, what'd you say, the properly oriented left and right, they're good for each other?
Well, if you're going to have a society that flourishes, it's proven that they're
so hard to even hear.
That's true for Catholic theology as well, right? So like, and we don't like that today, but it really is that you can play within the bounds of Catholic theology and be a faithful Catholic and actually have different perspectives that you emphasize. A classic example of this is high Christology versus low Christology. So high Christology in the Catholic theological tradition is they emphasize the divinity of Jesus. And I can, Damascus is probably high Christology. We emphasize the divinity of Jesus. He's a wonder working God. There's signs, there's miracles. When we proclaim the gospel, we emphasize his divinity. That doesn't mean we're preaching heresy to say that he doesn't have a human nature.
He's fully human, fully divine, but we're emphasizing his divinity.
We're emphasizing his divinity often in our preaching and our teaching. Low Christology is that you emphasize his humanity. And so like a lot of times the Franciscans are going to emphasize the humanity of Jesus and solidarity and he's one with the poor, right? And so, but the Franciscans aren't denying his divinity. And so you're in healthy Catholic theology with an emphasis on one or the other, and you're both faithful Catholics. And so I think when it comes to social issues, the church is so valuable because they do allow there to be a spectrum of dialogue on how to handle these social issues and in a way that I can, there's a spectrum on how there's nuance where the church could say, that's appropriate. This is faithful Catholicism. And then there's boundaries that you're out of bounds, right? Yeah. So there's just like in Christology, you can get out of bounds in certain ways. And in some of these social issues, you can get out of.
And then we declare anathema.
Anathema. Yeah. So I think that's really a valuable insight to bring to the table.
Yeah.
All right. Should I do sense?
Do it, Dan.
Come on, dude. Wow.
Yes.
That is actually pretty impressive. I regularly.
I've been working on it. I come up here by myself.
That's what I was just envisioning in my
after hours. No one's here.
Amber's like, where's my husband? Oh, he's attempting some penny throws.
For my two cents, I'm not really going to, I'm going to make an appeal as opposed to answer the question. I think it's probably because it's a lot of different. My first encounter with Jesus was in seventh grade on a mission trip, serving the poorest of the poor in Appalachia, America. And I think because of that, my heart has always had a deep love for the poor, the suffering and the marginalized. That love hasn't waned. It's only grown and grown and grown. And I think I find myself, and I find a lot of the Catholics that I hang out with being more on the evangelizing side of the mission work of the church. And because of that, the issues of social justice or equality or the dignity of the human person are often they're set aside, they're undermined, they're even treated as if they're less important than evangelization. And so I think my appeal is Jesus Christ came for the poor, the suffering, and the marginalized. He came not for the well, but for the sick, right? And the church has a beautiful spectrum of social teachings and social principles, like the preferential option for the poor and vulnerable. And I remember when I started learning the social principles, I got angry at some of them. Like the first time I learned about the preferential option for the poor, I was angry by it. And I remember having a theological like argument with my religion teacher. I disagree. Because I grew up in a very Republican home and with a very a good American dream mentality of what I work for, I deserve.
Yeah, meritocratic. Right? Meritocracy. Yeah.
And so but as I wrestled with it more and more, I understand why the church has a preferential option for the poor and the vulnerable. And I think that if you get offended by some of this stuff, the question is why? Like, why are you getting offended when people are fighting for the rights of women and the equality of women in our culture today? Why would that upset you? And of course, we don't want that to be the extreme, but is there something going on in your heart when you're angry at the equality of women? Or are you angry people who aren't Catholic that are trying to live their lives like having human freedoms that are rights? And so so it's like when things get stirred up in you, before you just go after them, like really think, has the gospel shaped my heart and my mind in this area, or has it not? And and I think my appeal would be, as an evangelizing ministry that does a podcast on mission and evangelization and very focused on high Christology, I think my appeal would be, this stuff is really important as well. And the church walks on two legs, both justice or if you will, justice and charity, the leg of caring for the poor, the suffering, the marginalized, and evangelization.
Yeah, and it's and serve.
Yeah. And if I only have one leg of that, I'm going to topple over and I'm probably an imbalanced Catholic. And I find that...
judgmental of you, Dan.
Yeah. But I just find that a lot of times in the dialogue with people, I feel a little bit of an imbalance where we give a preferential option for the evangelization movements that we really like, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's how do we make sure that we're trying and we're wrestling and we're learning from the church's wisdom on the social principles? The social principles are a little trickier too, because they're principles. And so our social principles aren't really a doctrine. So the doctrine are very black and white. And I can definitely say this is moral or immoral, or I can say this is what the church teaches and not. And the social principles are more nuanced. And so it's harder to have conversations around those things, and it's harder to be formed effectively in those things. But I think we need to form our conscience just as much on that as we do on the morality of the church, that this is a realm that is important and critical. So that's my appeal. This matters, and you are a faithful Catholic if you care about these things. And if you're trying to be a faithful Catholic and you don't care about these things, start caring.
Mm, I love that appeal. I think that, yeah, it's so important. Like, it's important to check whatever proclivity you have. We come back to this on this show, I feel like, all the time. But everyone listening is going to have a way that you tend to bend towards.
Yeah.
It's just the way that we were made. Like, there's going to be people that tend more towards like encounter and expression. And there's going to be a side that is more towards intellect. Always. There's just always going to be that. There's always going to be a side, like in all stratas of human existence, there's always going to be a side that's more towards like, hey, let's give people room to like manifest the destiny that they're working hard to do, right? Like, let's give people freedom to ascend, but also let's help people who aren't able to ascend in the same way, find commonality with them. And there's a reason for both arguments. And I think that what I have grown immensely in, and I think as a large product of being in relationship with you two, is like constantly checking my presupposition, not because of me being wrong all the time, but because there is a lot of times an alternative perspective that is equally valid, that like comes from the exact opposite angle. But when you check it, it's like, that makes sense. And that's why virtue's held in tension. That's why the church has always taught about these tensions. And I never put it with high Christology and low Christology. It's so evident what the church is trying to do there. It's trying to give the people who are going to have those proclivities the opportunity to relate to the Christ, the anointed one, in the way that their heart's been shaped to. That makes so much sense.
And if we look to the lives of the saints, they live both evangelization and the work of charity and justice in strong ways with different approaches, right? Yeah. And so Mother Teresa's approach to evangelization was different than Francis Xavier's approach to evangelization. And so they were both evangelizing, but Mother Teresa wouldn't lead with the proclamation of the gospel. She would lead with charity. And so there's they're both saints. And I think when we try to say this is the right way or this is the wrong way, that this, like, did you actually go to prayer, and are you just telling people to do what God's telling you to do? Or or do you trust that the individual's asking God, how do you want me to engage in these situations, topics?
I love it.
Going back to the question, I'm just curious, any final thoughts on, one of the ways that I hear this is, what if I am trying to be a faithful Catholic in the place where I'm planted, but for whatever reason, my culture, the culture of my parish, the culture of my community doesn't seem to promote justice and equality. Mm-hmm. How do I do it?
Well, I think that might actually be a mission that you're called to. Like, if you're in a community, we've talked about this before, there's two kind of options in this scenario, and they're both based on what God tells you. Like, one is I actually lean in and I become a voice for like, hey, these are things that as a community, we can continue to have a conversation around how we can value them more. And I could be a conduit for that. Or it could be, man, Lord, I think you're shaping my heart in such a way that like a community like that's over here, because maybe your community's not doing anything wrong. It's just it's a matter of emphasis and you feel called to emphasize it. But I think those are your two options. It's like, if I'm in it and I'm coming up against a wall, it's like, Lord, are you calling me to be a voice here and to advocate more here? Mm-hmm. Or are you calling me to find, like, what we call it in the church, right, is a group that has a charism, mm-hmm, that's similar to the one that you seem to be putting in me? And I think it's, yeah, a reasonable question, and it's hard to, it's discernment.
I would say if it is that you're asking that question, I can be a faithful Catholic when I'm in this community and it's not being emphasized, or maybe it's even the community isn't your church community, maybe it's your secular community, oh, yeah, sure, right? So if I'm an employee at a business and the business is really promoting diversity, equality, and inclusion, there are extremes of DEI that are very agenda driven and are the extremes, right? So a faithful Catholic in that situation would want to say, okay, how am I going to respond with a knowledge of the Catholic social principles in an appropriate way with these different topics? And how will I talk to my coworkers, or maybe how will I be a leader who I was talking to a really successful Catholic business leader one time. He's the CEO of his own company, and it really took off. And we were on a Zoom call with other Protestants and Catholics, and we were talking about how to be missional in the workplace. And he had this, the topic of DEI came up, and should Christians engage in DEI or not? And he had a really interesting comment. He's like, you know, the only reason DEI exists is because we as Christians fail to live our own social principles. That if we would have, like, we actually have in the repertoire of our tradition as Catholics, we have these Catholic social principles, but we could have been the ones driving the dialogue on how to raise people up and how to include people and how to love people, mm-hmm, and how to care for the dignity of everyone and how to have diversity in the workplace. He's like, but we failed to be the leaders in that. And so then the world became the leaders of that. And I think that there is a call on us to say, okay, what are the struggles or the issues or the, mm-hmm, problems in the world today? Right. And as Catholic lay people, how do we become the leaders, yep, of that solution, as, mm-hmm, opposed to just simply being the people who are always pointing out who's doing it wrong?
That's, mm-hmm, awesome.
Yep.
Also recognizing, and again, we all agree with that here, but just to make sure, because there's also a way by which that harmony is rejected at times. So there will always be a movement against what the church is standing for, but just make sure to check yourself and your heart to make sure, yep, you're standing for what the, mm-hmm, church stands for, so that when something comes against it, you know how to defend it. I think that's it's just an addendum to what you're saying.
Yeah, so absolutely. I agree,
Dan. Well, we are not just a show about mission. We're a show on mission. Dan, what's our mission of the week this week?
Oh boy, geez, I was so fired up by this question. I wasn't thinking about the mission of the week. All right, I think the mission of the week is there's probably someone in your workplace that you can think of that you're on a different angle on these topics, or maybe someone in the family, and have a conversation that is actually trying to hear their perspective on a deep level. The testimony of this is I've always been pretty skeptical of DEI, even though I've shared about it a little bit. I'm kind of like skeptical. Okay, is it, what's the agenda?
What's the agenda
here?
Behind,
yeah, yeah,
it?
And I was I met someone who was a DEI director for a really large bank, and the person wasn't Catholic. They weren't even Christian. And I was in. We had like an hour long conversation, mm-hmm, about what types of programs she was implementing for her people and what the motivation was. And it was neat because when I actually talked to someone who this was not only their passion but their job, my skepticism kind of went down because I was able to hear their perspective, and I realized, oh wow, at least this business was doing this really well. And I think sometimes we can just assume that everyone who's on one side of an equation that's different than us is the spawn of Satan. You know? And so I think just finding that person who stands on the opposite aisle or the opposite
proclivity, yeah,
and have a conversation with them. And the holidays are coming up, so take full advantage of that. Instead of avoiding issues, calmly, mm-hmm, enter in a really good dialogue on understanding the prayer of Saint Francis: seek to understand before being understood.
Mm-hmm. I've only used proclivity, I think, once this episode. I used it like four times.
I used it a lot this episode.
Yeah, yeah. Gosh, I don't know why that word's been in my. That was like five episodes ago.
Jack, in the show notes, can you put down the exact number of times?
But there's a bot for that.
Said, yeah, proclivity.
Get some of that, Jack. Go ahead and do some more work now.
Hey, I'm really grateful that you joined us again this week. Thank you for joining us for Beyond Damascus. This is the show where encounter meets mission. We love hanging out and talking about your questions. So please share any additional questions that you may have. Engage with us in the comments. Email us at beyond@damascus.net. And if you found this show to be upbuilding or challenging, go ahead and like and subscribe or share it with someone who you think it might be valuable to. We're grateful again for you joining us this week. And remember, as always, friends,
mission makes sense.
Have a great week. We'll see you next time. God bless.
Get it.
You're listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. You can listen to the whole version of today's episode on www.ewtn.com/radio/podcasts, or check us out on YouTube or your favorite podcast app. We will be right back after a short commercial break.
Proclaiming the faith, changing lives.
The year was 2000. Mother receives an enormous package from the Vatican. She opens a box live on her television show and discovers a monstrance that had been given to John Paul II during his 1999 pilgrimage to Poland.
To learn more about Mother Angelica's life and the history of EWTN, visit EWTN.com/Mother Angelica.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
More to Life is all about exploring what it means to live the Catholic difference in everything we do.
Our goal is to help people see that when they are connected to His grace, there is so much more to life.
More to Life with Dr. Greg and Lisa Popcheck, Monday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Anyone and everyone that listens to Take Two is part of the Take Two family. They don't have to be Catholic. We welcome them. We invite them to join the family. I think that when people find out that we're not alone, we are the body of Christ. When we start acting like the body of Christ, people feel like they belong, they're accepted. And that, I think, is beautiful. That's where God is.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, weekdays at noon Eastern on EWTN Radio.
This is Matt Yonke with the Pro-Life Action League, inviting you to take part in the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Children on Saturday, September 13th. Across the country, solemn prayer vigils will be held at sites consecrated to the memory of these abandoned children, including 50 grave sites where the earthly remains of aborted babies have been buried. Visit nationaldayofremembrance.org to find the prayer service nearest you, then come out on Saturday, September 13th to join in. And remember, blessed are they who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
Welcome back to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. Beyond Damascus is aired on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and across Ohio on St. Gabriel Radio. Do we have a question of the week this
week? Yes. Okay. The question, yeah, we do have a question, Aaron. Would you like to know what it is?
Geez, don't talk back to Aaron, okay?
Yes, Jack. Yeah, until you get on BattleBots with your robotics, I don't want to hear it.
They wouldn't let us. The question of the week is, what is the best way to welcome non-Catholics to the Mass when it seems like a bunch of steps or rules to follow instead of a church service?
Okay, what's the best way to invite non-Catholics to the Mass when it seems like a bunch of steps or rules rather than a church service?
I'll go first.
Oh, wow.
That was great. Yeah. That went way across the
studio. That other penny might be gone forever.
All right. My two cents would be, I think often we as Catholics falsely assume people are going to hate the Mass. And so I think we're very hesitant to invite non-Catholics to Mass because we think it's not going to be a desirable experience for them. Mm-hmm. And I would challenge that, especially in this modern context, right? That I think the back of our mind is like, oh, the Protestants, it's so easy because they have these church services with great music and good preaching and lights and sound and hospitality, and the Mass is just like, you know? And I think there are definitely parishes where the Mass is unattractive, right? Because of the music or the whatever
hospitality or the homilies.
Yeah. And so we want to make the Sunday experience better. But I think, honestly, as we get into, like, I think there's a hunger now in American Christianity, if you will, for a deeper experience in their relationship with God. That enough people in their relationship with God have had kind of the hoopla experience. And so there's a lot of people who are like, how can I have more? Like, what's the next step? And so I think if you're asking people kind of, What are you looking for in your relationship with God? And so treat an invitation, not as just an invitation to get someone there, but as a pastoral relationship, right? What are you looking for in your relationship with God? Or what are you looking for in a church community? And listen to them, right? And then communicate how the Mass could be a great way to find those things, right? Most people are going to say, like, what I'm looking for in my relationship with God is being able to like hear His voice more or have Him guide me in my spiritual life, right? And then just explain how the Mass helps you do that. And I think, like, because the hunch on me is, man, it's so much easier to invite friends or people to like a really really well done Protestant church service, right? That'd be an easier invitation. But I think it actually is that, when I think about kind of why I love the mass the most or what my favorite masses to attend are, my favorite mass to attend is the 7 a.m. mass with no music and when the lights are kind of low and it's just quiet and contemplative, right? So like, because that's when like that quiet contemplative mass fuels my spiritual life the most, even though I'm a charismatic and love worship and love like a time of worship, right? That there's something so beautiful about that fuels my spiritual life. And so there's other people like that out there that aren't looking for the Sunday service that's at the church down the road all the time, that maybe they are looking for deeper mystery. I invited someone to mass a few months ago, and afterwards I asked them what their experience was, and they were raised Catholic as very little, but they left like around 11 or 12, right? They hadn't been to mass in a long time, and it was their first time coming back. And so I was a little nervous, like, oh, I did, because I didn't theologically explain things to them before they went. I was just like, oh, I'll just invite them. I didn't know they were going to go. So I asked them how it went, and it was so interesting because their response was, I like how theatrical it was. And I was like, what? And they were like, yeah, you could tell that everyone really cared about what was going on, and there was a lot of focus given to what was taking place. And it was like, I would have never have thought that was going to be their experience, but they just sat back and they watched, and they could see that everything centered around the altar and everything centered around the Eucharist. And they're like, I like how there's all the stained glass windows, and I liked that they were wearing like the cassock, or they didn't say the word cassock, but I like how everyone was like dressed like they were focused on it was just theatrical to them. And so I think probably a better way to say that is they noticed the importance of the Eucharist. And so I think everyone's going to have their own experience when they go to mass. I don't think we should assume so low of people that they're not going to enjoy it just because of the mass.
One of the I guess questions or criticisms that I'll often hear about our work at Damascus is that the type of experience that we provide for kids can't be matched by what's happening at their parish. So, you know, the mass that we have here at my local parish, I don't have the same dynamic preaching, or I don't have the same dynamic music, and I don't have all the big screens and all the excitement, and I don't have hundreds and hundreds of kids in the room and and young adult missionaries and all that stuff. And one of the things that I love to tell them when they bring that to me is that here at Damascus, we actually make a really concerted effort to celebrate, to present the mass in varieties of expressions. Mm-hmm. So Dan, like the way you just identified the 7 a.m. mass at the parish, that's more contemplative and quiet. Believe it or not, even here at Damascus, where you know, ruckus and amazing and powerful events and stage production is our specialty, our weekly staff mass is actually very much like you described. Mm-hmm. It's a contemplative, quiet, subdued expression of the liturgy built to foster a greater intimacy with the Lord and the Eucharist.
Yeah, and then at summer camp, we have masses that have worship music and everything. Yep. And then we also have masses that are just completely quiet to give the campers both experiences.
Yes, because to say I want both means you actually have to present both. That doesn't mean I want both, therefore ignore your preference and acquiesce to mine.
And the key is then it's almost everything strips away and you're able to see what's most important. Yep. And it's Jesus.
Definitely. Yeah, I the only thought I have on it is that you guys haven't hit is just I think when I'm reflecting on don't presume that it's going to be boring to people. Yeah, I think sometimes we can get in such a, a presupposition that like we are a super exclusive environment that no one could kind of understand the way we do.
I'm so sorry. I lost it. Aaron just tried to flick a fly with his finger. I've never seen a human being do that before. It was the craziest mannerism.
Brad.
I'm so sorry, Brad.
No, don't be sorry.
I was trying to maintain composure, but this man just went like this.
What was funny is I was watching you and I was like trying to figure out my next word, and I'm like, what is Dan
Why
doing?
Is this fly? And the fly wasn't even close. I mean, it was like 2 feet away.
I missed that part. This gives good context. All I'm trying to say is we're not as exclusive as we think we are, and there are people who might actually be able to see something in it that we who have been going for a long time might miss.
Yeah,
that's my general thought.
Well, can I share one of my favorite moments in my life?
Yeah, sure. Boy, what's going to happen here?
I was on a mission trip, and we were putting a roof on a house, and there was like a wasp nest that was attacking us.
Yeah,
and one of the guys in the trip was really anxious about the wasps, so I took out the hammer out of my tool belt and I went to hit a wasp out of the air, and he was like, put that hammer away, you can't kill a wasp with that hammer, you're so stupid. And I picked out a wasp and smacked it out of the sky with the hammer, and I was on a ladder and it came down and landed at his feet.
Nice.
That is amazing.
That was God and smiling upon you at the moment.
He was such a funny kid. He was one of my favorite people in the world. Nice. And he immediately like accepted his dose of humility
and repented. He repented publicly.
Like, I'm so sorry. You can't hit a wasp.
999,000 times you would have missed that stupid wasp. But it's that one time.
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm sorry, Brad, for laughing as you were saying something important.
I was trying to make my way through.
I've got a great two cents if I can help.
Aaron, please.
I'm struggling because I actually have. Oh, that's it. Thanks, guys, for
both
celebrating.
Of them.
Yeah. Hey. I guess everyone can hit a wasp with a hammer now and then.
Okay, I'm debating between two, but I think I'm going to lock into the first. So
do it.
Dan, similar to what you were saying about how we underestimate what experience someone might have with the Mass. The Mass is deeply scriptural, and I think oftentimes we as Catholics may actually even miss the deep symbolism and particularly scriptural symbolism that exists in this kind of routine, you know, quote unquote activity that we engage in every week. So I'll recommend a book real quick. It's a friend of our ministry, Scott Hahn, wrote a book called The Lamb's Supper. And he gave a talk by that same title probably, I don't know, 15 years ago. And it just absolutely struck me as he walked through the expression of the Mass and how the Mass is actually a perfect fulfillment of almost like a recipe of what's prescribed in the book of Revelation, as John describes his revelation of heaven and how it is that the eschatology, like the end of time, will be invited into that experience of relationship with the Lord. And the premise that he has is that, like, this was a reality that the early church knew so closely it was impossible to ignore. And that when we see John's vision of heaven, that we are actually invited into a now expression of that invitation to heaven. That the Mass, unlike any other prayer that we can pray, actually invites us into the fullest expression of what the wedding feast of the Lamb is like, of what the kingdom of heaven will be like. And yet it's shrouded in symbolism and in human expression, but it's a deeply mystical experience and it's a deeply scriptural experience. And, you know, I don't want to paint with too wide a brush, but oftentimes you've probably heard that there's a sort of an assumption that Protestants know their scripture a little better than Catholics do. And I've not experienced myself, but I've heard amazing testimony of like a Protestant who will come to Mass for the first time, who will say, I had no idea that the Catholics believe in scripture. Like, the Mass is filled with scripture. Mm-hmm. Every response that we pray is a scriptural response. You know, we don't just focus around one Bible reading. We focus around four mm-hmm. on a typical Sunday. And that's ignoring the fact that all of the antiphons and mm-hmm. all of the mm-hmm. introductory prayers are they come from a scriptural foundation. So the Mass has tremendous appeal, both from that place of a beautiful and symbolic and mystical understanding, and also from a deeply scriptural understanding as well.
Yeah, I think being able to frame that is so important, because there is something about the legitimacy that comes from being able to frame that out for someone. So like, if there's someone that you've been like having conversation with, yeah. and you're thinking about bringing them to the Mass, it's not a bad idea to start actually with, like, have you ever read scripture before? Here's like and going to a couple things, because I'm even thinking about the different ways that it's foreshadowed in the Gospels and obviously Revelation, but just those different ways that you can say, hey, what it's saying here, you're going to be able to see that like when we go there. So just keep an eye for this and this. In the context of relationship, if you have a relationship with someone that's close to you and know this is important to you and are like, hey, I'd love to experience something that's important to you, I think it's a...
Yeah. Can I make just another quick point is the, you know, we've talked about sort of this balance and relationship between a more traditional expression of liturgy and maybe a more modern expression of liturgy, yeah. right? And I would love to just celebrate and to acknowledge that most individuals who with their whole heart are attracted to a more traditional expression of liturgy, it's actually to that sense of mystery mm-hmm. and to that sense of like this presentation of this beautiful, deep scriptural reality that attraction stems from. So I forget how the question was phrased, but it was something along instead of a church service. And I would argue that when we fall into the temptation as a church of trying to kind of water down or make more presentable the Mass, and I'm not talking about accessible and mm-hmm. And beautiful, right? You know, we try to do that at Damascus, that we do implement modern music, but in a way that is beautiful and faithful to the heart of the church, right? But when we present the Mass in a way, or when we try to water down the Mass so that it might become more normal, I think we can tend to actually lose that mm-hmm. that thing that is actually at its core the most important.
Completely. Not only the most important, something that sets us apart.
Yeah. Right?
So modern man is looking, many people want the mist. Many people want mm-hmm. the, I think that the Lamb's Supper really changed my whole outlook of the Mass as well. So
way to go, Scott. We love
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
but I think that like learning all the parts of the Mass and then walking through a person on the parts of the Mass. I mean, it's so funny, but the penitential rite like blew my mind that, oh, wow, it's so beautiful that we start this liturgy like asking for forgiveness of sins and receiving forgiveness of sins. And then the offertory, it's so beautiful that I get to offer my life as a living sacrifice to the Lord as we carry the bread and wine down, the work of our hands down to the altar. And then the work of our hands is transformed into Jesus's body, blood, soul, and divinity. Like there's so much beautiful theology that I think we almost kind of undermine our Protestant brothers and sisters if we don't want to show them the Mass, like as if they're like not theologically wise enough to understand the mm-hmm. beauty of it, right? And I think even inviting, as you were sharing, Aaron, I was just thinking like inviting a Protestant brother and sister or inviting a non-Christian to Mass, not as a agenda just to get them to become Catholic, but as a means for Christian fellowship, right? That that there's something about like, oh, I want to show you liturgy and then a willingness to go to their service as well to see what they do. Not that I'm going to skip Mass on Sunday and go to the church down the road, but to make a priority to, okay, I'm going to go to Mass and I'm going to go to church. Why? Because it's Christian fellowship, no matter what is good, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I show an interest in what they're doing and what they're experiencing, they're going to show an interest in what I'm doing, what I'm experiencing. And then either way, we're both going to be better because of it. So if it's a coworker and you're like, man, I really wish I had more like Christian fellowship at work. This is how you can build that Christian fellowship at work, right?
Totally.
Like actually invest in each other's spiritual lives. And then that's going to create create a brotherhood or a sisterhood that you now have in the workplace that you didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And you can't really do that if you have an agenda to make them Catholic, right? If the agenda is, I want to relate to you better as a fellow Christian, I think we're going to be way better off.
I think Matt Frad does that excellently. Like when he brings on a Protestant brother or sister and has like a long form discussion with them, he'll regularly even put it like it, just to call out the elephant sometimes. Like if you were to ask me, like, would my desire be for you to eventually become Catholic? Yeah, because I found it to be the most beautiful expression of the faith that I know. That said, like, I want to hear about everything. You're able to be honest and be like relational mm-hmm. at the same time. Like you can totally, you don't have to forfeit the ability to honor them and support them and understand that they're bringing a different lens that will help your spiritual mm-hmm. life. And like, it doesn't have to be divorced from the other, I guess is what I'm saying. I'll throw these two cents in. My two cents, I want to take it. I had a little bit of a different angle, but hearing you two, I think I want to put a capstone on this thought. I think that one of the best ways to welcome non-Christians into the context of the Mass is by simply allowing them to enter into the context of the Mass, not feeling like you have to over-explain it, not feeling like you have to overemphasize these different pieces, because I think that what we underestimate sometimes is because we feel uncomfortable with uncertainty, we can sometimes leave people outside of the ability to wonder. And it's like, no, like, yes, it might be a little uncomfortable because you might be uncertain as to when we should stand and sit and kneel. And it might be a little uncomfortable that you don't know the words, the responses that everybody else does. But before I judge that as immediately a bad thing, why don't I just let it happen and understand that I can be a human in relationship with you afterwards? And if there is a part that was confusing and hurt you, we can talk about that. But my experience, when I've seen people that come into the Mass for the first time, and this would happen in college quite a bit because of just the way that we did outreach, my experience was oftentimes they're like, what was that all about? Like, it wasn't actually from a place of like, because I was uncertain, I was uncomfortable, and now I'm frustrated. It was, I don't really understand that. And I don't know of a better starting place to get to an evangelistic conversation than that.
Yeah.
Then like, I don't know if I understood that. Like we see this all of the time just in normal human life. It's like, maybe, God forbid, but we lose someone close to us. It's like, I don't understand that, right? That's a first question. Or let's get it on the other side. It's like, man, there was a real breakthrough there and something amazing happened. And I don't really understand that, right? Or like, man, I came out of that car accident unscathed and I don't really understand that. Or you can go into like so many scenarios, but the Mass has that power, maybe and probably from a theological perspective, definitely in a way that nothing else does, because there are parts of it that are like, that is so outside of my ability to grasp it that I'd like to ask a question about it, or I'd like to be inquisitive towards it, or I'm intrigued by it. And so I think that we can often in our, and this is speaking to probably the person asking this question, a lot of the people that listen to this podcast regularly, you're usually looking through a missional lens, and you're probably usually thinking to yourself, like, how do I make sure to make a conversion most convenient for the person? But I think sometimes because we ask that question, instead of how can I just be faithful and how can I be in relationship, because we ask the first question and not the second, we'll hesitate to bring people into uncomfortable circumstances and situations when maybe that's exactly what they need in order to take the next step that they're called to take. So if there's a non-Christian in your life that's close to you, and I know that my mom does really well with this. She invites people to church all of the time with her. And my mom is not the most like theologically driven person. Like she's not a person that's going to spend most of her time digesting all of the like theological writings of Thomas Aquinas, but she's a faithful Catholic who loves the beauty and differentness of the Mass and who understands it more and more year over year. And she just lets that be a part of her life that's accessible to others, just like all the other aspects of her life, like bringing someone over for dinner or giving someone a ride to work. Like, and I think that is so, so effective. And the way that that sparks conversation, I don't think can be undermined. So I guess just to put a one liner on it, I think how can I approach bringing a non-Christian into the context of the Mass by simply doing it and not overthinking it and not undermining the power of wonder and awe.
It's good. I love it. I love that.
Another thing that's come to mind, Brad, is so Mass is the fullest expression of Catholicism, but it's not the only expression of Catholicism. So I know this isn't the way the question was worded necessarily, but if what the listener's asking is, how do I introduce someone to Catholicism? Like if the Mass is overwhelming, there are other ways.
Yeah, great point.
So we run an event here at Damascus called the Outpouring, and one of our staff members made a comment at the Outpouring. It's like, you realize this is just essentially a really great Protestant service.
Service, yeah.
Right?
Service,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah, well, I mean, like it's not copyrighted. We gather for music and for prayer and for preaching, and mm-hmm. like we want to build up the body of Christ.
Yeah.
So something like that, or a scripture study, or a small group, like can be a great way to continue to introduce that positive experience with Catholicism in addition to what we're discussing.
Yeah, there's other evangelistic tools that we have. Well, also the idea. So I'm not going to get too much on a soapbox, but it does frustrate me sometimes when that question of like things like the Outpouring, let's even take it out of a personal context. But when that's questioned, it's like, no. Like anything to get someone to like hear truth and start wrestling is a good thing. Like, what are we talking about? Like, don't allow the what in our minds we know to be perfect become the enemy of the good that allows them the next step on their journey to, well, you mentioned the eschaton earlier, but the perfection that we'll experience one day. Like, I do think that sometimes we can put the cart before the horse and not ask ourselves, like, how can we give as many opportunities for a positive engagement with Catholicism as humanly possible. Yeah. And there's going to be different ways to do that for everybody. Some people are going to benefit from going to the daily mass with Dan, and that's amazing. Some people are going to benefit from having an invite to come to something like the Outpouring. Some are going to have a benefit of entering an Advent Bible study with you. But
I think the liturgy, when you're familiar with other church experiences, like the Outpouring, where you have preaching and worship and prayer ministry, like it, when you have experiences like that, and then you're introduced for the first time ever to the liturgy, you realize, well, this is a different kind of prayer. Because when I go to other services, I'm usually the customer, right? And like, you feel that way. The preacher is speaking to me. The preacher is motivating me to have an encounter with Jesus, right? It's almost, but then when you enter into liturgical experiences, whether that's the mass or adoration, which is a liturgical experience, all of a sudden I'm no longer the main character. He is. And I think there's something really interesting about that, where all the prayer is directed towards, there's something going this direction forward, as opposed to something coming to me. And someone who's familiar with Christian prayer services, when they all of a sudden get in front of a liturgical experience, they're like, oh, this is different. And then that's when the wonder comes, like, well, why did you do that? Why'd you do that? So often inviting people who are engaged in different Christian services is going to be a cool, stark reality, because it's going to spark some questions in them just naturally.
That's actually brilliant. Sweet. Yeah, it actually gives the context for the differentness. Yeah. Like it gives the thing that you're comparing what you're experiencing in the mass to. I think that's actually brilliant. Yeah,
that's why it's not bad to go to a church service that's non-Catholic and get fed by it and built up by it, because it's meant to feed you.
And it's a different kind of prayer. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a different kind of experience. And so you don't have to feel guilty doing that. It's good for your spiritual life, then do it, right?
Yeah.
But the liturgical prayer, and it were like the church only asks that we do that for 1 hour of each week, right? Like it's a particular kind of prayer. And so we can fill our lives with other things, because sometimes people leave the Catholic Church because they want these other experiences, right? And it's like, no, you should have those other experiences. Those are healthy things. Not saying that you should like bounce. I'm not like encouraging everyone just go find Protestant churches to go to, but those aren't bad. And we've got to, as Catholics, we have to stop acting like that's bad. And that we're going to like somehow like fall prey to Satan by going to a Protestant church service, right? No, they're meant to edify you and build your spiritual life up. Do you need to be theologically discerning? Maybe, right? But I feel like most common lay people aren't like getting led theologically hardcore astray, but stay grounded in your weekly experience of the liturgy as well.
Yeah, I love that.
The mass is the same everywhere. It's universal, right? The mass that happens in the beautiful cathedrals of Rome is the same mass that's presented in my local parish.
It's unbelievable.
Whether I like the organist or not, right? And one final thought on this topic is if truly you're going after, like, I want to experience for myself, or I want to invite somebody into an experience that is truly celebrates mystery, don't be ashamed of maybe seeking out like a particular mass. I think of even here in the Diocese of Columbus, some of the masses around the Triduum that are celebrated at our cathedral are just there. They completely blow me out of the water every time I attend, because the choir is so beautifully practiced, and everything flows in such a way that's been rehearsed, orchestrated for the purpose of bringing honoring glory to God. Like, I also don't want to encourage shopping around. Like, going to your local parish is a great way to engage consistently in the mass, but it's also good to have a variety of different experiences.
And even in that, the Tenebrae is what I think of often. And it's like, I think that's fascinating that the non-Christian that came with you, Dan, mentioned the theatrics of it. Mm-hmm. Like, there is a theatric to the liturgical like expressions that we have. And there always has been. Like, go to the traditional Latin mass. And I mean, like, it's like a play in motion, right? Like it is, and it's meant to be that, because there is there's a sensory component to it, obviously, or we wouldn't have incense filling the entire space. Like, obviously it's unto this kind of like, experiential being that we've been made to be. And so I think, don't underestimate how powerfully the mass can bring that alive. But also, to your point, Aaron, like it's actually okay to have other contexts to welcome people into if that's not the right one for them at that time.
Wow. What a great discussion today. Brad, do you have a mission of the week for us?
I do, actually. So I'm excited about this. So I want to encourage us to get outside of ourselves. I'm not going to just give the mission of the week for you to go bring someone to mass with you.
Come on, that's what
but yeah, because that would have been the most like
everyone
on the nose.
Nervous. That
would have been the on the nose one.
Coming.
I think what I do want to emphasize, though, is we all have contexts that we're living our day-to-day life in. So we're at work, or we have people coming over to our house for a variety of reasons. In whatever context you find yourself in most often, or maybe where you find this opportunity, just make a note for yourself. Like, I want you to share the Catholic faith of yours with someone in your life you haven't shared it with before. So if it's a coworker and they've made a comment about your crucifix on your desk, and you've never actually expressed to them that, like, yeah, actually, what's your faith like tradition like? Because I was born and raised Catholic, and that's the reason I keep this there. Or if like someone comes over and you have some kind of seasonal decoration, if you have an Advent wreath, or if you have something else, like actually taking the time to, if someone notices something like that, or you find an opportunity, really just presenting like, yeah, I am Catholic and I
take
love it.
Ownership.
Yeah, exactly. Ownership instead of just renting. Cause I think a lot of times we can do all of the cool things like wear the crucifix, have the Catholic radio bumper sticker, but never actually tell someone that like, I am proud that this is what I have. And I think that could get us along the line, and maybe someone that's listening will welcome someone to mass from that.
Yeah. I love the Mass. This has been a fun conversation. I don't think we talk about the Mass often enough.
Yeah. Well, it's a show about mission, and, you know. So and the Mass is super mission oriented.
Yes,
so.
which we also miss all the time, but that's for a different day.
I do love the Mass, and I do love mission. Brad, you may mention the word Mass actually comes from the word mission. Mm-hmm. That mission and the Mass are one expression in the same. And we can't have a relationship with the Lord outside of a relationship of mission. So thank you for joining us for Beyond Damascus. This is, of course, the show where Encounter meets mission. And I hope that this show was edifying for you, that this little 30-minute conversation of the Mass is getting you pumped and excited. If so, please like and subscribe to this show. It helps us to spread further, faster. Mm-hmm. And if you feel like today's conversation may be meaningful for someone in your life, maybe even that non-Catholic friend of yours who you might want to just put a little bug in their ear and say, hey, what do you think about this? Would you be interested in attending with me? I hope that it bears great fruit. If you have additional questions, post them in the comments or email or text them to Jack, because he gives out his cell phone number.
Yeah. Are we going to dox Jack?
Please don't. We have a second mission of the week this week to try to kill a insect with a hammer.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, yes. Jack,
be aware of your
if you accomplish that, send that video to Jack as well.
Yeah. We're grateful that you joined us here this week. And remember, as always, friends,
mission makes sense. Get it?
God bless. Friends, thanks for listening to Beyond Damascus, the show where encounter meets mission. You can listen to the whole version of today's show by searching for Beyond Damascus on YouTube or your favorite podcast app.